profession is. So, yo, are there clients where I'll go, yeah, I'm fucking done.
Yeah. And then I go home and I look over their stuff and I go, man, maybe a scumbag, but they do need a lawyer. So, any other questions? Next question? Yes. Have you ever had a time where it has taken everything you've had to not bust out laughing?
When I was, I started my job as a reporter in May 2015. Something happened in July 2015. Someone announced some kind of run for something that kind of changed the paradigm of working as a reporter / journalist. It got to the point where in 2018, I was really thankful to interview the Uncut Men and Their Friends, if anyone's aware of this. They are a bunch of anti-circumcision protesters who stand on, they stand in busy intersections all over the country, wearing white suits with giant blood stains all down the crotch and pants of their legs, or legs of their pants, you know what I mean. By the time it got to 2018, it was lovely, lovely. When I got to interview these individuals, because part of me didn't really get it, but they were nice. And then the interview was going really well, and then one of them reached out and saw that I was sweating, because it was 95 degrees outside, without asking, without saying anything to me, they reached out and they wiped my forehead off for me. And that was the point where I just kind of shut down for a few seconds, turned off my recorder, said thank you very much, got back to my car, and just, I don't even know what the, it was like a barking laugh. It was just the most ridiculous interaction I'd had with someone in quite some time.
Well, I've told you about my time traveling. Actually, I was trying really hard not to laugh this one time. I told you that I was a risk manager at a medical practice. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was very nervous, and we had a lot of people come in to my office to complain about things, which didn't necessarily require complaints, but, you know, since everybody was very risk-aware, let's say, everybody wound up coming to me. So I heard everybody's sob stories. But this one in particular, I just couldn't help but, I was going to laugh right in her face, because she said, I want a doctor that speaks English. Well, all of our doctors speak English. That's not a problem. No, I want an American doctor. All of our doctors are American. And I just tell them they're all citizens. Do you have a problem with that? No, she said, no, I want an American doctor. You know what I mean. The subtext there is that she's racist. In case that's not, you know, immediately obvious. So I got
you was saying I want a white doctor.
Yeah. So I got to play that game with her until she gave up. And that was a lot of fun. And the second she left my office, I closed the door and just started belly laughing. It was the most fun I've had on a job shutting somebody down.
Court is like bad improv.
If any of you saw Furry Jury yesterday,
you honestly cannot predict what's going to happen sometimes. You can't. And that got highlighted, even when they have another attorney. Because, like, a pro se litigant, somebody representing themselves, when you see that, you're like, oh, this is going to be fun. Like, I hope I've cleared off most of my calendar. I'm going to be here all day. But even when they have another attorney sometimes, because it really depends on the caliber of the other attorney, there was an evidentiary hearing that I was attending for my client. And there were accusations going on both sides. The testimony was going to be taken. The judge was probably going to be deciding the matter that day. And opposing counsel, who's a guy I like, I know him, I like him. He's a nice guy. God bless him, he's not an amazing attorney, but he's a very nice guy, was on the other side,
And he looks at me and he says, before that, he goes, well, you know, I've been given some evidence by my client that we think really establishes our claims. And I said, well, what is it? And he said, well, hold on. He reaches in his briefcase and he pulls out a 5-gallon Ziploc bag filled to the brim with human hair. And I looked at it and I said, what is that? And he said, this is the evidence. And I said, Gary, that's a bag of hair. And he said, we think it proves our case. And I said, whose hair is it, Gary? And he goes, it's my client's. I go, Gary, may I ask how 5 gallons of your client's hair in a Ziploc bag proves the case? And he's very, very quiet looking at me. I said, Gary, did your client hand you this right before we came into the courthouse and said that was the dead bang evidence? And he goes, well, I go, we don't know what this means, but please, for the love of God, introduce 5 gallons of human hair evidence today. I've had attorneys on the stand when they realize question isn't going their way, look at their own client on the stand and be like, I need to protect myself. And there was one case that happened, and same attorney, by the way. There was one case that happened in where I spent my client's testimony getting our case out, and his client's testimony on my cross-examination just dismantling her case piece by piece and a bunch of questions. And Gary realized what was going on. And there's something after cross-examination, it's called redirect. You get to try to undo the damage the other attorney just did on cross. And he's quiet for a minute, and the judge goes, do you have any redirect, counselor? And he goes, one moment, Your Honor. And he makes a big show. He's flipping through his notes. He, you know, glasses. Miss X, I've never been alone with you in your house, have I? No. And you've never been alone with me at my house, have you? No. Nothing further. And sits down. And there is a moment where the judge and I make eye contact. And the judge goes, and I go, we found out later that that witness, that client of his, had a history of when they lost one of their claims, accusing their attorney of being improper with them. So what he was doing was establishing on the record and under oath that they had never been alone together, because he fully expected to lose the case and wanted to have sworn testimony to show the disciplinary board when she tried to sue him. I know I said that he's not the best attorney, but that was some fucking Machiavellian shit.
I saw you first.
So, through the pandemic, I know a lot of us have to go online for work and stuff. Any notable experiences through, like, Zoom or, like, any form of communication that you use to do your coding?
The question is, were there any notable experiences on Zoom or remote working in your profession during the pandemic?
I went fully remote in my role for the first 3 months. Temporarily did some in-person events during the summer, worked from home mostly, and then once everything started opening up again, we went right back to loading into the Capitol for 16 hours a day for several weeks at a time. So it was a trip. Within a month of being exposed to nothing but terror and pain, because I was trying to get accurate information out to people, Instead of like being super partisan in my role as a communicator, I try to just get people uncut information as truthful and accurate as possible about whatever situation is going on. So within a month of that, I had myself a brand new medical marijuana card due to post-traumatic stress disorder. Although that's also from heart surgery from a few years ago where I woke up and found out, oh, I'm awake and they're zapping my heart from the inside. So, you know, fun stuff. Really, I'm sorry, you know, levity, you know. It'd be real fun, just lifting the mood here.
Do you want our business cards after this?
No. Sorry. Oh, actually, yeah. I don't know.
Mine are in my room. Buddy?
Most of my work experience during the pandemic was at my office. So I wound up having a lot of in-person, face-to-face stuff, particularly with people who didn't want to wear masks in the building. So I don't know if you can tell this from the audience, but I am largely male-presenting, assigned male at birth. This is how everybody in the building knew me. And the only reason I bring this up is because I was one of about four males in the building. And that meant that, in addition to all of my other hats that I wear, I was also the bouncer. So I had a lot of people come up to me and say, like, well, I'm not wearing a mask. No, you got to wear a mask. Put it on or you're not coming in. No, put it on. No, I'm going to call the police if you don't. Okay, the police are coming. So I had a couple of experiences like that. But I think my favorite experience was when I was talking to somebody down from drug withdrawal, and it turns out I am an opioid whisperer. So, you know, you got me, buddy. Give me $50. I'll talk them down. But, yeah, most of my pandemic experience was dealing with people who were having a real bad time dealing with the pandemic. So nothing over, like, Skype or anything like that, but tons of in-person stuff.
We didn't close my office. Like, there was an order from the governor saying any non-essential businesses have to close, and there was an order from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court saying that included law offices, but they had a caveat that said, unless you can't reasonably do your work from home without injuring a client. So we interpreted that based on our office, which some people in here have been in my office, to mean we could keep our office open because there was no way in hell we could take our files home.
And there's this little thing called digitization.
Yeah, no, that does not fucking happen anymore. So we put a sign on the door that just said, you know, we'll conduct meetings via Zoom, even though we're in the office, but we're not meeting with people in person. So we worked in the office the whole time. Some of the courts went virtual for stuff. The one that sticks out with me was I had a virtual hearing on a very sensitive matter. It was a romantic dispute. And my client was appearing from their home, the other party was appearing from their home, the attorneys were appearing together. It was one of those where, once again, I just sort of dismantled their case on cross-examination because it's a very specific type of case, and it's one where you see people bring those claims as a heart balm. A heart balm is a legal term that we use when two people were in a relationship, they're no longer in a relationship, and one of them is pissed, so they find a reason to bring a lawsuit. Because of the sensitivity of the claims, the court had basically said, nah, it's open to the public, but we don't want you circulating the links. And we're like, no, that's cool. So my client is appearing from their home, I'm appearing from my office, dismantled the case, it gets dismissed. I do tell my client, I say, hey, give me a call, just so we can discuss some final things. And we get off, and my client calls me, and we're talking. And about halfway through, my client goes, the guys really enjoyed that. And I said, what do you mean, the guys? And he goes, oh, yeah, I had like 10 people watching on the screen in the living room. And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, we hooked it up so that would feed into the TV in the living room. I'm like, you were having a fucking pay-per-view of your court. He's like, well, can I? I said, no, they're open to the public. You certainly can. There's nothing wrong with this.
You there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah. No, there wasn't. It's open to the public. It was a type of hearing where whether the matter is sensitive or not, it was not a closed hearing. If it was held at the courthouse, you could walk in, sit down, and view the proceeding. I just found that amusing because it is the first and only time where somebody was like, I'm going to call all of my friends over to watch my court hearing. Like, shit, I wish I had known. We could have charged admission. The good thing was later I was like, you know, knowing this person, their friends are probably going to need a lawyer. So that was pretty good advertising now that I think about it.
May I cut in before you?
Yes.
I thought of an actual positive experience I had with Zoom during the pandemic. I was asked to put together a press conference advocating for the formation of a free two-year community college program in the state in which I live. I said, hey, that's a cool idea. I'm happy to do that. So I did. And it got a lot of attention. And a week later, that proposal showed up in the governor's budget for that year. I'm not just going to be a downer the whole time, only most of the time.
Well, this one wasn't a pay-per-view session, but it should have been. Back when I was working as a mediator, we had, most of the cases that we wound up working on were divorces or breakups. But this particular one was a magistrate court case. So for those of you who don't know what that means, this is small claims court. This is where the magic happens. This is the greatest show on earth. And it's open to the public. So if you guys ever have a free afternoon, show up to your courthouse, ask where magistrate court is, sit down, and don't do anything. The magic will come to you. So in my county at the time, everybody who went through magistrate court was required to go through mediation. So me and the other mediator, we wound up hearing their case, like trying to get them to settle it. It didn't work. Here's why. They took it back over to the judge across the hall, and gradually things started coming out. They broke up. The guy was trying to get his tomato plants that he planted for her back, so he started digging them up with his bare hands. She hits him with a white picket fence. Her mother throws a brick at his head. You know, standard stuff. So when it comes out that that they were in fact assaulting him with potentially deadly force, the judge starts turning against the woman in the relationship, and when she realizes things aren't going to go her way, she stands up and says, I'm pregnant, and it's yours. I know, God, I wish I'd had a camera on me for that one.
Next question.
The rabbit in the back.
So, I work for NASA, and I help train astronauts. I work with a lot of really smart people.
You should be up here instead of me.
Yeah, what the fuck?
And they make, the thing I've learned is, like, they're kind of just dumb in different ways than you and me. So, I was wondering if you guys had any stories of people who could absolutely know better, but have done something really, really dumb.
Kidding me, people who are here.
Oh my God.
I'm going to need a minute here. I can't decide.
So.
I was a crime reporter for a while. I had a lot of those. There's a reason I come to furry conventions, is to try to reclaim the good I see in people. Because I've seen some horrifying shit. I don't even want to go into details, because like I said, I'm trying not to be a downer the whole time.
There is a judge, a very good judge. I appear in front of them regularly. They're very fair. They always try to do not just justice, but equity, which is fairness. It's essentially the legal term for fairness. They try to do fairness as well as justice. Very good judge, was a very good attorney when he was practicing. When they got elected to the bench the first day, they came out and they were doing, you remember how earlier I talked about cattle calls and how they do a call of the docket, right? And a call of the docket may be like, you know, Commonwealth v. Jones, Attorney Badger for the defendant, Attorney so-and-so for the Commonwealth.
And they do that the whole time. And when you look at the docket, it'll have, you know, plaintiff, and across from that, the last name of the plaintiff's attorney, defendant, and across from that, the last name of the defendant's attorney. And that's how they call the list: plaintiff, plaintiff attorney, defendant, defendant attorney. And it's not uncommon for it to be like Smith v. Jones, you know, Smith v. Jones, attorney so-and-so for the plaintiff, attorney so-and-so for the defendant, and just keep going down that. And this judge, who had just been elected, had just been sworn. This was their first court appearance. They show up for a cattle call, and they're calling the docket. And as they're calling them, they keep saying, you know, plaintiff so-and-so, defendant so-and-so, attorney Prossy, like 10, 12 times. And for the defense, attorney Prossy is attorney Prossy here. Attorney Prossy is attorney Prossy here. And this happens for case after case after case on that docket, attorney Prossy. Attorney prosecutor, and he starts to get angry. You know, I don't know who attorney Prossy is, but how dare they not show up for a day that they are called to court on a case they are entered in? I will be directing my clerk to locate their office information and demand they appear. And at that point, the bailiff leans over and whispers in the judge's ear. Now, before I tell the rest of this story, let me explain another legal term. There's a term called impropria persona, and it is Latin, it means for yourself. Now, I am appearing as that person. It is a term that we use when somebody does not have an attorney, and they are representing themselves because no attorney has entered in front of the court. There's a shorter way of saying that, and it is what you use on the dockets for the call of the list. For self, pro se. And when that happens, it will read plaintiff, plaintiff's attorney, defendant, pro se. This judge, who had decades of experience as an attorney, who God knows how many calls of the list they had attended themselves as an attorney, had been calling for attorney Prossy and getting very, very irritated that this attorney had not appeared, and their bailiff leaned over and whispered at them, and the judge went, Commonwealth, Attorney Rodriguez for the Commonwealth, Jones, appearing pro se. To this day, we refer to this esteemed jurist, who we all like, as Judge Prossy.
So the question was people who should actually know better. So when I was starting out as an attorney, my first job as an attorney was in bankruptcy. So this is me less than a year out of law school, only a couple months after having been admitted to practice law. And I am in charge of Chapter 7 bankruptcies for the second largest filing bankruptcy firm in my city. So I have 2,000 clients at any given point. Now, obviously, I think this is a little bit of a stretch for somebody who didn't really know what he was doing to the level of management. I mean, but my favorite client was one that I was handed over to me from the Chapter 13 bankruptcy department. Now, the difference between Chapter 7 and Chapter 13 bankruptcies, Chapter 7, you give up all of your assets in excess of a certain amount and use those to pay your debts, after which your debts are discharged. You know, it's a fairly simple process compared to Chapter 13. So those you pay back your debts over time, generally over the course of 5 years, and you don't necessarily get a discharge of any of your debts, but it's more of a restructuring. So the problem with that is if you get any excess money or excess property in the course of your five-year bankruptcy, you know, you got to pay that in. So one of our Chapter 13 clients unfortunately lost their job and were not able to make any payments, so they got switched over to a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. But the paperwork was lost in the middle of this, so it took them a little while to get this process on the way. In that amount of time, my esteemed colleague who was in charge of their case managed to miss or completely ignore the fact that his clients won the lottery twice. Yeah, and when asked what they did with the money, because you're going to have to pay that money in your bankruptcy, for God's sake. I mean, you're like, you owe a lot of people a lot of money. Where is it now? We went to Disney World. And my coworker hands this over to me and says, this pooch is screwed. You need to unscrew it. And I take this over to our managing partner. I say, like, you know what? This is malpractice right here. We could have done goofed big time. And not in the fun way, like when Goofy has sex with you at Disney World, but we done goofed. And he looks me right in the eyes and says, yeah, we got insurance. That's what it's for. I turn to my notice the next day. So, any questions in the audience? I think I saw you first over there on the left. Starbucks shirt.
Cool. I'm glad you kind of brought up small claims court, because I wanted to ask about that. Have you got some funny small claims court stories? Anything where, like, the judge just, like, takes very little time to just come to, like, yeah, this is the obvious.
Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah, this was one that I wasn't even taking part in. I was just observing this day. So I was sitting in the back of the courtroom watching Magistrate Court. This lady with, let's describe her attire as buttons up the side of everything and juicy written across the posterior. So it was kind of, when she said that she was a dancer, we kind of all knew what she meant. So she was applying for a temporary restraining order against one of her coworkers. Now, this isn't particularly unusual. I mean, when you're in the field of exotic dancing, unfortunately, you do attract certain types, and certain types of those people don't necessarily know boundaries. But honestly, the guy seemed okay until he started talking. So then over the course of about 10 minutes, he starts saying things like, oh, but I love you. Oh, but we're engaged. Oh, but here's the ring. Here's the receipt for the ring. I spent $500 on this, and you said yes. Woman turns around and says, what's your name again? She got her protective order, all right.
In Pennsylvania, we don't actually have a small claims court. And I'll explain that what people think of a small claims court is like it's below a certain amount, so it has to go in front of this court, and that's not what we have here. We have a lay judiciary, and lay judiciary is all that is fancy for the person on the bench doesn't have to have formal legal training prior to being elected to the bench. That is our magistrate court system. The only one that really has a different system for that is Philly, which has municipal judges, not the magistrate system. Now, our magistrates are the court of first impression for preliminary hearings. That is, you know, that one of the ways Pennsylvania determines whether or not there's enough evidence to charge you with a crime. It is also the court of first impression for landlord-tenant matters, meaning they have to be brought there first. And optionally, if, you know, some summary offenses, most summary offenses, some misdemeanors, optionally, it is a court of first impression for the civil court up to $12,000.
Now, it sounds like small claims, except the other half of this is you're not required to file anything civilly in front of the magistrate's court. You can go directly to the Court of Common Pleas, which, as I'll tell people, I will deny I said this until the end of my days. That is big boy court. That's what you get when you think of court, when you think of, you know, what you see on Law and Order. That's our trial courts, and you can bring an action in the Court of Common Pleas for any amount, no matter how small or large. How it's handled in there may differ a little bit, but so we refer to the magistrates as our grassroots justice system. Much less formal, much quicker trials and hearings on the matter. And it tends to have our magistrates react much more informally to things. There was one I was in front of a while back in the hearing right before mine. While I was sitting there waiting for my hearing to take place, was two people had gotten into a fist fight at a laundromat.
Tuesday again?
Yeah, I like more or less. And it was over the commercial washer. And they had both been cited for assault, misdemeanor assault, simple assault, and were appearing in front of the magistrate. And the way that happens is the police officer writes out the citations, and then the police officer shows up. The first thing was, this magistrate who I knew immediately looked at the location on the citations and said, "I keep telling them to buy another dryer." The sad part is after he said that, I'm like, "Is it the one on 6th Street?" And the other lawyer's like, "Yeah, it's the one on 6th Street." I'm like, "Fucking hell." Like the boxing club and laundromat. I mean, that tells you how common of an occurrence it is. The second thing is, neither one of the people were accused had lawyers with them. They were just both standing in front of the judge. One of them did not speak any English. They had brought their daughter along. Now, Pennsylvania guarantees if you do not speak English and you are appearing in front of a court in Pennsylvania, you have an absolute right to an interpreter at the expense of the court. Okay. The problem is, the notice saying this a lot of times is primarily in English. And it's not very clear on the translated parts that you're not responsible for that expense. Okay. It just says, if you need an interpreter, please call the court and ask. So a lot of people won't call the court and ask. They'll bring a family member. Now, in front of the Court of Common Pleas, what we say is, we're going to reschedule and get an interpreter in. And the magistrate's court, they're like, "Oh, your 12-year-old's here? Well, let's roll with it." So we have the lady who doesn't speak English and their 12-year-old child explaining to the judge how they didn't really want to get into a fight, except one person took their clothing out of the dryer and they had family coming over the next day, and the other person who was charged saying, "Well, I didn't take their clothing out, my mother took their clothing out, and that's what really set it off, because they came at my mother, and that's when I did this," and it's going back and forth like this, and I'm just watching the judge. This is the same judge who, because where their office is located, there used to be a raceway near there, has pictures of race cars all over the walls of their courtroom, right? And by the way, let me just tell you, the magistrate's courts, wonderful locations. They're not at the courthouse. They're in whatever magisterial district they're in. And we now have a pilot program where the magistrates are getting their own courtrooms, like custom built. But a lot of times the magistrate's courtroom is like, "Oh, is that the abandoned Taco Bell? Let's put a courtroom in it." You think I'm joking? I'm not. My office used to be the magistrate's court for our magistrate's district. My specific office was the holding cell. And you know what it was before that? A barber shop. Anyways, we're sitting there, they're going over it, And the police officers are there to testify as to what was told to them. And the judge, who like every time you bring up like a car thing in front of them, I've had people come in with like car repair things. They're like, "Oh, Your Honor, the car's outside." And I always let the lawyers who aren't from the area start going, "We got the car right outside, so I mean, come look at it." Because I know exactly the judge, like, every time leans in and goes, "I know the pictures are misleading, but I don't know shit about cars." But the judge looks at the police officers and says, okay. He says, "You wrote the citation for this one?" "Yes." And he goes, "And you wrote the citation for this one based on the signature here." And the police officer appeared and said, "I have never seen that citation before in my life." And the judge goes, "Okay, what?" And the cop goes, "I've never seen it. I didn't write it. I didn't sign it. I've never seen that citation before." And the judge goes, "Well, this is your name." He goes, "That is my name. That is not my signature. I've never seen that citation. I did not sign that citation. I do not know how that citation was entered." And the police chief for this small town was there, stood up and said, "Your Honor, that's right. That's not his signature. That's why we're here today." And the judge is quiet and looks over and looks at the lady and says, "Ma'am, do you have anything you would like to say?" And she goes, "Well, I just want to say," and he goes, "Ma'am, before you continue, let me advise you of something. Right now, there is no statement in front of me that you have committed any crime. Is there anything you would like to say?" And she goes, "No." And he goes, "Charges dismissed." He looks at the other lady and he goes, "What about the citation for this lady?" And the chief said, "We've got that officer here." And he goes, "Ma'am, I'm going to fine you $5 waiting court costs." And because obviously he was going, "Well, I can't dismiss the charges against her and like do the full fine against her. I'll have round two in my courtroom." And turns and looks at the police chief and just says, "Chief, we will talk about this in chambers." No fucking clue. We have no idea to this day. No idea. I even asked the judge the next time I was in front of him, like, "Your Honor, I remember when I was here about the laundromat case was up there," and he goes, "No idea." I go, "What?" He goes, "No, we still do not know who signed that citation." Like, fucking, that's worrisome.
All right, any questions at this point?
This will have to be the last one, unfortunately. It's 1 hour, and I've got it.
You have had your hand up for almost this entire.
Yeah, there you go. JT just called you. Yep.
I built a lot of tons of war machines, so my opinion sometimes reaches the ears of the high and mighty. So, and sometimes they are vexed by my opinion. So, what's the highest potentate was ever replied and been dismissive or annoyed by something that you did?
That one's tailor-made for you.
What's the question again?
What is the highest potentate that has ever responded to something you've said and been dismissive or annoyed?
There's the accused murderer who called me at my desk and proceeded to lecture me for a half hour about how the hate crime that he had just been accused of committing was actually a setup by the cops. In the middle of talking to him, I looked him up and realized he had served 22 years for braiding someone. Let's see, there was the elected official who I will admit I screwed up the story. He threatened to sue me. I apologize, we got the correction published. He still threatened to sue me. I left my position at the newspaper and I had to glad hand with him a few months later, hoping and praying that he did not know who I was. And of course, I do have contact with the lawyers in my office. There are many intelligent, incredible policy folks who I work with. Their job is to read over the editorials and press releases and press statements and things of that nature that I am responsible for creating, and telling me exactly where and when and how fucking stupid I am being when I misinterpret things. And I misinterpret things a lot. It is incredibly complicated to read policy and derive meaning out of it for the average person. I get told, I get threatened with lawsuits a lot. I don't know what else to say.
I'm not going to elaborate because they're still on the bench, but a state Supreme Court justice called me a fucking asshole once.
Insult or compliment?
An insult.
The very first time I was in front of a judge, she spent 10 minutes telling me that I was an idiot. Then she was right.
There was also the time that a local certain party got absolutely washed in the local elections. They blamed my reporting. My response was, "You never responded to my request for interviews. Can you blame my reporting if you never actually spoke to me?" So there's that.
Alright, well, if you all want to continue to go to the trade, I actually have to go to the trade. Folks, it's been a pleasure. JT, it's wonderful to have you up here. Anytime. Always good, my friend. Well, these two.